A warm welcome to our listeners today. My name is Landy Jack. I am the owner and founder of Worldwide Business Intelligence, and it is my absolute privilege today to have Mike Hancock, my life partner and business partner, with me in the studio today.
Woohoo!
I have a lot of interesting questions prepared here for you, and really interesting to hear what you're going to answer. You know, it's one thing when you share your life with someone on a day-to-day basis. It's a complete different thing when you have them on a podcast. So I hope you're ready.
Exactly. And she's been diligently writing questions for the last little while as well. So I don't know what's coming, folks, but it's great to have you all here.
My darling, you're a very public person. You've been since I've met you now over 7 years ago. And I always tell you that you are probably the guy and the person, male, I've met in my life that wears the most colorful and expressive clothes, you know, from your shirts and your shoes that's sponsored. Tell me why your style is so unique and important in terms of your message to this world.
Well, I think that's a great question for people who don't know me. You know, it's easy to say that I need a brand, and I certainly am not a suit and tie guy. I wore suits and ties for many years in corporate. I don't even own a suit these days. But I think it goes right back to the fact that my mother and grandmother used to dress me up when I was a baby.
And I saw the photos.
And definitely that stuck with me. And then when I became a musician in my teenage years through to about age 30, played in rock bands, and you know that was the 1980s, early 1990s. So you know, I had zebra skin tights. So I think having a paisley shirt and Mayer.com shoes, Mayershoes.com, if you want to buy any shoes, I don't think is anywhere near that style. But I think in all reality, it's I don't see that I have any sort of natural thing about me like that carries presence. So therefore I'm not, you know, 6'2". I don't look like a rugby player. I'm not a fashion model. So therefore I'm using the elements of dress to make sure that I have a unique style so that people understand and get comfortable with that. But it's also a polarizer, because some people like that and some people hate that. And others don't care. So I love polarization. I think we're just such a planet full of pleasers in the modern world that, you know, it's okay to not like something. It's okay to disagree with something. And if you want to build a tribe and build people that are with you, then you probably should have something that people can either like or dislike about you.
Yet there's so many entrepreneurs and especially very successful leaders that work with you that is so scared to express their essence and bring that into the mix when it comes to business. Yet you don't seem to have any problem with bringing all those aspects together.
No, well, I think it's, you know, one of the things that those people that do know me might know that I'm a musician, and I mentioned it before, but you know, I'm still a musician. You wrote some fantastic lyrics. I turned them into a song. We put a video to them that went up on Facebook quite recently, and to other things as well. So that's utilizing essence. But the reason why I put it on Facebook and out to our audiences is so that they can see that there's different dimensions to us as well. We're not just Worldwide Business Intelligence, hardcore, crush it, grind it people, because that's not us at all. We're people who love the beach, we're people who love the sky, we're people who love animals, we're people who love life. And so many people just live for the next moment in their business, whereas you and I both believe that, you know, you decide on your life first and then you build your business around that life. So I believe that our clients, the ones you mentioned, even the very successful ones that aren't embracing their essence yet, are actually leaving off some more of their success or some more ways that people can access them. And it's strange, because the people who allow their essence to come through what they do can be successful, even if what they do is not so great at the moment or they're learning and developing.
You spoke about being a musician. Let's pick it up there. For those of you who don't know Mike, he comes from a musical background from a very young age, where he had a band called Charlie Brown. That is Charlie Brown, C-H-A-R-L-E-Y, a long Y, and Brown with an E at the end. So that's Charlie Brown. I've seen the photos. It is just the dress during those days, and the hair and the pants and everything.
There's a documentary on YouTube.
Go and watch it. It's just fantastic, actually, to understand those facets of Mike. But you come from a musical background. Recently, I've seen you again produce just the most fantastic music. And I don't think many people, even who attend all of our events, realize how much of the music that plays there is produced by you. But in that, as a musician, and as a person who I know is have the vision of putting a documentary together, Harmony, why is bringing business and music, or business and harmony, together for you so incredibly important?
You know, I think business doesn't exist. And I think that's the answer, is that I remember when you and I were in Wellington and we were in a mastermind there, and we had that guy from the cloud computing company in the room, and he was telling us he's struggling to get, you know, the big clients. And we said, well, who do you want? And he said, well, I want Air New Zealand. We said, no, who do you want? He said, I want Air New Zealand. We said, well, Air New Zealand doesn't exist. What's the CEO's name of Air New Zealand? So, you know, it's business doesn't exist. Business is about people, and people are matter. And matter comes from light, and light comes from sound. That's fundamental quantum physics. Ask Michio Kaku or Brian Cox or any of the quantum physicists. So the reason I love bringing music and business together is because in 1977, the year you were born, in Auckland, strangely,
thank you, weren't now born everyone
in,
knows.
You weren't born in Auckland. Whoops. You weren't born in Auckland. But the year you were born, a guy by the name of Ray Toombs created a computer software program where he realized and understood that the financial markets of the world worked in musical scales. He did that based on the work of Pythagoras and based on the work of John Dewey from America. But essentially, I got really intrigued by that, and I found that out to be absolutely true. And at the fundamental level, all matter comes from light, and all light comes from sound. So you and I and all of our listeners are nothing but music. So your business has a rhythm. It has a tempo. It has a volume. It has a timbre. It has all the eight components of music pitch. You know, your business has a pitch. Everybody knows what a pitch is. So your business has those eight components, and that's why it's really important to simplify things, because when you think of marketing, you go, oh, what's the best way to market? Well, I'd say have the right pitch and turn the volume up. It's pretty simple.
Yeah. And, you know, I think it's really fantastic to hear you talk like this in terms of how you bring these things together, because I think there's so many entrepreneurs out there who is sick of the traditional way of teaching, of bringing, you know, intelligence and information to them, you know, by saying, okay, if you're going to have a marketing plan, here's your three steps. Or if you're going to be a leader, here's your three steps. But you take these analogies that comes from your own unique being, which in this case now is music, and help them see business in a complete different sense. On that topic, you bring business and leadership together. You're very known for working with leaders and what you call conscious leaders. But also in that mix, you really are known as a sacred wisdom expert. And I know 7 years ago when I met you, that was one of my big draws. You know, I wanted to know more about all this symbology and Egyptology and all these things you spoke about. It's such an absolute expert in this area. And for those of you who want to actually go and Google Mike after this, because he has an incredible, interesting, unique face. Now, I know I'm very biased, but your face reminds me so much of Ramses II, actually, and I find it a curious coincidence. But also, as your life partner, I know you have incredible deep knowledge in sacred wisdom. How do you bring sacred wisdom, business, and leadership together in your teachings to entrepreneurs of the world?
Oh, it's a fantastic question. Thank you so much, my darling, for answering it.
I can't answer it.
Again, it comes down to the fundamentals. So everybody basically has faith. If you don't have faith, you are faithless. And that's a tough way to live. So, you know, faith, and I'm not talking about religion here, but let's bring religion into it for a minute. You're a Christian, you're a Jew, you're a Muslim, you're a Taoist, you're a Buddhist, etc. You know, whatever that faith is, generally sitting behind your faith, you have some sacred works. The Bible, the Quran, the Tao Te Ching, that sort of thing would be some examples of them, the Bhagavad Gita for my Hindu friends. So that body of work was written a long, long time ago. But it's interesting that when you read something like the Tao Te Ching, which is the Tao, which is a very, very sacred Chinese faith, the people who wrote that essentially say in one part of it that they got a lot of this information from the ancient masters. Now, the Tao, like the Bible, like the Bhagavad Gita, like all of these books, the I Ching, etc., were written thousands of years ago. And these people, even in the Bible, those of you that are Christian listening to this will know it says this in the Bible, that they got this information from the ancient ones. And so there's a little insignia at the base of the foot of the Sphinx in Egypt, and it's a little hieroglyph, and it means, the literal word is Zep Zepi, but it means you are here at the place of the first time. So this wisdom that we see and we believe and we go to our churches and everything like that, we study, there's subjects at school, all of this wisdom is so ancient. It's so highly developed. It's been through so many copy editors, if you like, to get it to us, that I like to draw on parts of it to really show people how nothing has changed. Nothing has changed. So whether you were a frankincense salesperson in 3000 BC in Memphis in Egypt, or whether you're now an IT company in, you know, Silicon Valley, nothing has changed. You have a market, you have buyers, you have a message, you have brands, you have teams, you have partners, you have all of this thing, and it's all there, all the answers in sacred wisdom.
Do you think, as a musician, Zep Zeppi is where Zeb Zeppelin got their name from?
No, not where Led Zeppelin got their name from.
Well, that's a fascinating answer, because I've, over the years, noticed the passion and in which you speak to your leaders, people who you lead into leading, leaders who you lead into having a higher and wider and more intense impact on this planet. And one of the things that I always witness come up in your conversations with leaders, whether you're teaching them to have a bigger impact, or whether you're teaching them to sell one to many from stage, or whether you're teaching them just to walk in conscious leadership, is energy. So how does what you just told us about leadership and sacred wisdom and how the environment has not really changed, how is it more important than ever for leaders to be mindful of their energy now than ever before? Why can't they just completely discard what you just said any longer?
Well, most of them will. That's the shame. But more fool them. So in a book I wrote in 2010 called What If You Were God, one of the chapters was about the seven developments of the world, basically, and of human history. So I'm just going to give you the last two or three so you get the idea. It all starts with basically the start of evolution. But the last two or three, we had the Industrial Revolution. And then after the Industrial Revolution, we had the growing age of information, if you like. And then on the 21st of December 2012 at 11:11 a.m. Greenwich Mean Time, we had the shift into consciousness.
Do you all see why I'm intrigued?
Yep. We all which, by the way, was the coincidence with the Mayan prophecies, which were found by Jose Arguelles, great guy he was during his life, in the tomb of Pakol Voltan, a Mayan priest who luckily wrote all of this stuff in something that now is known as the Popol Vuh. But basically, it's the transference of consciousness on the planet. So these days, we are experiencing a very different world. And it's a very different world than it was 15 years ago. It's a very different world than it was 30 years ago. And so, you know, in 1992, my darling, when Harvard University released a global paper on the trends of the next 10 years, they didn't even mention the internet. They Wow. didn't even mention it. They totally didn't consider it to be a trend. And so coming back to your question, we have now moved into this conscious zone. And this conscious zone means that our energy and our thoughts create what we become. Now, we listened to The Secret. Rhonda Byrne brought that out in 2006. I know you listened to it before you met me. I know, you know, hundreds of millions of people around the world have listened to that. The Secret didn't give you the answer. The Secret basically said in the movie, what you think about, you will become. So, you know, I sit there and I go, I need a Ferrari, I need a Ferrari, I need a Ferrari. And then suddenly a girl called Anita Ferrari rings me, right? So, you know, I learned that the true wisdom in consciousness is that you have to use all the senses. So you have to smell it, feel it, touch it, taste it, you know, see it, intuit it, and create it. And you have to constantly be in that zone, and then things will just happen. And when you get good at this, it's amazing how fast this stuff happens. So these days, you know, there's a saying that is business at the speed of thought. And that is so true, but it also can be business going out of business at the speed of thought. Because, you know, in our world today with things like the COVID virus, so many people are going, oh, I won't survive. Oh, I'm going to fail. Oh, this is bad. Oh, my bank account's going to empty. Guess what's going to happen to them? That's exactly what's going to happen to them. Whereas other people are going, wow, this is new. This is interesting. This is I've got to look at things differently. Wow, this is an opportunity to review everything I'm doing and maybe to pivot or shift to something new.
Well, Anita Ferrari can call you as much as she wants. Chances are you're probably not going to pick up your phone.
I won't pick it up.
I know you do when only a few friends call you. It's rare. You bring so many alternative teachings to leaders and entrepreneurs. Maybe share two or three of those alternative teachings to them. I know phone calls is something that you believe just is a complete waste of time. And I do know, as your partner, you do things quite different. What are those two or three things that'll give our listeners an insight into Mike Hancock and how different you do business and life?
Well, I think the first thing is something that we share. Now, you hate to-do lists. I still have a to-do list. Although I have to say, in the last 18 months or so, my to-do list goes down to about 3 things, whereas it used to be 40. Yeah. I used to try and put things on there. But Lundy shared, you know, I heard her share from stage so many times that she doesn't have a to-do list, and she really doesn't. And that gives her freedom, and that allows her to focus, be single-minded and focused. I think it's a great idea. I don't use the phone. So my corporate years, I remember coming away from a corporate golf day, turning on my phone and having 63 messages to answer. And I thought, I never want to go through that again. So folks, if you have my phone number, you can probably Google it. You can ring it. You'll get this message. I think the message has been on there for years now. Hi, this is Mike Hancock. Please don't leave a message on this phone. I'm traveling at the moment. And if you need me urgently, email me at such and such or get back to me at such and such. So this has allowed me, if you like, to free up time. I remember we have had a client in Cape Town many years ago who was an accountant. I hope he's listening. And when I told him I don't use a phone, he said, well, he gets on average over 100 phone calls a day. I said, how do you get anything done? He said, I don't. So you always become a responsive person. And you and I are great believers in building a business around the life you want, not a life around your business. So this leads me into number 2 thing. At around about September, October every year, Lundy and I sit down and we go, what do we want to do in the next 12 months? Now, in 2020, it got hammered a bit by travel arrangements, but we simply go, well, we'd like to do this for Christmas. We want to go on holiday here. Well, here's the dog's birthday, grandma's birthday, our birthdays. They're all special days, your mum's birthday. And then whatever else comes up, everything like that goes into the diary. Firstly, that takes, honestly, folks, probably about 8 weeks workout. Now, we don't work Fridays anymore, so that limits our time to 4 days a week by basically 44 weeks that we work.
And now you want to aim for 3.5.
I want to aim for 3.5 in the next couple of months. And so so that leaves us really, say, 40 by 4. So we've got 160 work days a year. So therefore, you've got to be pretty ruthless with your time and what you do. So that would be number two. And I break my time down into run days. And in run days, I might have 9 or 10 meetings. I don't know anybody who has 9 or 10 meetings in a day. Then I have hide days. Nobody can get me. Don't answer calls. Don't respond to emails, etc., etc. Getting my head together, thinking. And then I have normal everyday days, just like everybody else, where I might do a strategy call with somebody, do a podcast, answer a few emails, and give some thought.
To be honest with our listeners, Mike does 1,000 things different than mainstream, but okay, we don't have a whole day. You spoke about a book, What If You Were God? Now, I really, in the beginning, when me and you met and got together, really started to read your books, got into your books because of your unique mind and the way you see the world, just totally different than anyone else I've ever met. And for those of you who think I'm biased as his partner, there's many, many people in Mike's community who would agree that his mind really has a way of viewing things different. And you've written about these things. And I've read all your books, some of them that stands out, What If You Were God, Can't Teach a Goat to Dance, and just now launched your Conscious Leadership book that went to Amazon number one bestseller very, very quickly. As your life partner and business partner and the person who travel by your side all the time, I notice that when you fill in your airport card every time you're on the airport, you have so many roles you can ascribe to yourself. You know, you're a musician, you're a business strategist, you're a world traveler, you're an award-winning speaker, you're all these things, but yet you choose to call yourself a writer. Tell us a little bit more about Mike the writer and the different types of messages that you've been sending into the world with your different types of writing.
Well, it's a really good question. And firstly, I love writing because you never know as a writer who reads your work. So you never know whose lives you're touching. So it takes the ego out of it to a large extent. Whereas I find as a speaker, it's easy to get addicted to the applause and the standing ovations, and it becomes more about you than it does about them, which doesn't serve the greater community. So
you've had many.
Yeah, but I like that about being a writer. So, you know, I'm a polymath, as many people are these days, so there's lots of things I can write about. I love writing about ancient wisdom, and that's in all of the books. It's in Conscious Leadership. It's in, you know, What If You Were God and other books as well. But these days I've also taken more esoteric ancient wisdom and some of the stuff that I find is really amazing about the world. For instance, you know, who controls the world, really? Who controls the monetary system? You know, does the president have any power? All of those sort of things that I think about deeply and that I research. And I've put them into a series of novels. You know, the first novel's Truth Seekers. The second one's KV55, which is coming out late 2020. And the third one's called Ancestry, which will be coming out in probably 2021. So that's a way of accessing and triggering people to think more broadly about their life. When I write, I really only do two or three things. I see myself as somebody who gets people thinking, gives them different perspective, gives them perspective. Some people have no perspective. So I give perspective. I open people's minds and I challenge them on their beliefs. So all of that doesn't mean to say that I care if they agree with me or not. Because in essence, some people will agree with lots of stuff I say, some people will agree with some stuff, and some people will agree with very little. That's not the point. The point is to get them thinking, because in our own lives, we create our own reality. Our thoughts become prayers. I know you had that etched on our mirror in our bathroom for 2 years with lipstick. Our thoughts become prayers. So I remember that. So therefore, I'm trying to change the way people think so that their prayers which essentially is based on the, you know, the law of manifestation become reality.
And you do that with your writing. That's fascinating. Many moons ago, even before I graced your life with my presence.
Absolutely,
you did. You went to Phuket, and it was the big tsunami.
Yes.
And you went there, and you actually gave so much of yourself during that time. I know it was a tough time in your life, and you went there, and you helped, and you lended a hand. And I know in many respects, that launched you into the world of charity, owning an orphanage in Cambodia, being quite involved in the beginning in the buy one, give one concept. And I also know that you always tell people that, you know, you don't look for go-getters, you look for go-givers. You are quite a charitable person with a very big heart. Share with our audience a little bit of that part of yourself and why you give so much of your free time to the world the way you do.
Wow, that was a question, folks, I wasn't expecting. So I'm going to clarify a couple of things in that question as well. Up until the time of that tsunami, I don't think I had been very charitable at all. I might have given a few bucks here and there. And I think one of the reasons I did is because fundamentally at a heart level, I knew that my money wasn't making a difference. And I remember around about that time, for the time before that, I had been donating, probably because of guilt more than anything, to a charity called CCF. And I sponsored three kids, I think. One was in Brazil and one in East Timor and one in Indonesia through CCF. But when I actually investigated it, I found that 80% of my money that I was paying on a monthly basis was going in admin fees. And I'm going, what the hell?
Wow.
So when the tsunami came, I was already planning to go to Asia. It wasn't like I got on a plane and went there. And, you know, as everybody knows, on the tsunami happened on Boxing Day. And it wasn't like straight away that I got there or anything. Like, didn't like jump on a plane on Boxing Day. I literally, you know, got on a plane a few weeks later and I was in Asia doing some things and I took extra time and I went to Koh Phi Phi and then to Phuket and I helped pick up pieces off the beach. It was the most incredible experience. I met people that were just amazing people that had been through this thing. And then strangely, straight after that, I went to Cambodia for the first time. Now, we never owned the orphanage there, but we, for 13 years, were the major patron of the orphanage. Basically, we put most of the money into the orphanage that allowed the orphanage to function. And the only reason we stopped doing that last year, I think it was that the orphanage came to a natural conclusion. It was run by one lady who's now in her 70s. All the kids are growing up. She started it post the Khmer War, et cetera, et cetera. But the reason I think I give is because I enjoy making a difference, but I give of what I'm really good at. So I'm really good at strategy. I'm really good at ideas and innovation. I'm really good at speaking. I'm good at writing. So that's the area I give at. I don't stand behind hot dog stands and cook hot dogs for the kids' fair on a Saturday.
It's a pity because I really love hot dogs.
Lundy does love hot dogs. If you're ever in New York with her, you'll find out. But I don't do that because that's not my thing. So, and I believe that, honestly, I believe that I've got so much more from this than I've ever contributed. In fact, in some ways, I feel a little bit guilty that I haven't done enough, even though from the outside, it looks like I'm doing a lot. So I think giving just becomes part of receiving. And if you try and keep that in some sort of balance, then I think you lead a good life. And I think that makes you a good person.
And I think because you give so much of yourself, you've also been able to create a life of massive, rich experience.
Absolutely.
That seems to allow you to give even more. My memory is going back now to Turks and Caicos. So what's that place we went to in the Mediterranean or Turks and Caicos?
That Caribbean.
Yeah.
Yeah, yep, we did.
What's that name?
Turks and Caicos, you're right.
And I remember you standing there and I took a photo of you in the photo was showing you now in your 108th country, traveling to your 108th country. And I know also that you have a very special connection to the number 108. I think you believe it's a sacred number. And so you've traveled really a lot. You've traveled to a lot of countries, and I know it is your absolute heart's desire to do another 108 if you can. So there's no stopping you. So in all your travels and in all of your experiences, first part of the question, why do you love travel so much? And second part of the question is for those entrepreneurs and leaders who really want to explore the world still and have such a heart for traveling, what would be the top three destinations you would recommend to them?
Firstly, for those of you interested in spiritual wisdom, 108 is the spiritual number for Buddhism. But it's also, the Nordic mythology, Egyptology, etc. And it's also one of the precessional numbers. So go and Google that. That'll keep you occupied for the next month. Travel for me is, we used to own a travel company, which we moved on last year. But we always used to say, we had a saying with that company, and the saying came from how I feel about travel. People love to travel not because they want to taste the Italian food or take a photo of the Eiffel Tower. People love to travel because they love who they are when they're traveling.
Oh, I love that quote from you.
And I loved who I was when I was traveling. And I still love who I am when I'm traveling. I'm the best version of myself. And I think it's because your eyes are open to the world. You have to live on the run. You've got to find ways to do things. There's nothing better than doing business internationally. If you can get on a plane and do business internationally, and I'm not talking about going from Australia to New Zealand or from America to Canada, that's not international.
Or South Africa to Mauritius.
Exactly. or any of those, or from France to Belgium. That's not international. Scotland to Wales, that's not international.
From one American state to
another. Yeah, exactly. But I'm talking about literally going from New York to Kazakhstan to do business. Boy, do you learn some stuff. And you learn so fast. And this is what worldwide business intelligence is about. This is where all of the information that we share with people comes from. It comes from life learnings of having to do stuff in different countries and constantly having less and less time because, you've told people, and you're right, since we've been together and traveling, we've done 22 times around the world. I know because I have a travel app that checks it about 4.5 times a year over the last 5 years that we've been solidly traveling. If I added my travel before that, I don't know. It could be 100 times around the world. But if we look at those 22.5 times, if we look at 4.5 times a year, we spend on average 8 weeks a year in an aeroplane.
Wow.
So
I didn't realize that.
No, it's crazy, right? So when you look at that, that's what it basically comes down to. So therefore, because you're spending so much time in an aeroplane, I can't remember whether that was aeroplane and airports, but I think it's just flying. Bottom line is you've got to shortcut a lot of stuff to get stuff done.
Yep.
So travel is a great teacher, and you meet so many fantastic people that just open the world for you.
Top three destinations.
Oh, boy, oh, boy. Greece is my number one, the Greek islands. We've lived there for a little bit over the years in the winter months. So that's number one. We live between South Africa and New Zealand, so I'll take those two and put them aside. But folks, if you're listening to this and you've never been to South Africa or New Zealand, that's just a phenomenal place. Number two, Cambodia.
You just love Cambodia.
I love Cambodia.
And the people of Cambodia, right?
Yeah, there's an innocence still. And hopefully the more first world they become, they won't lose that innocence. And the other one, I think from a travel perspective, because it is so innocent and so vast and so different to anywhere that most of us will travel, is Mongolia. And I know you love Mongolia.
I do.
It's probably second on your list.
Yeah.
But I love all the Mediterranean countries too. France, Greece, Italy, Spain, Portugal, all of those are wonderful.
You are an award-winning speaker, and I'm not putting it lightly here to our audience, you really have won a lot of awards in the speaking industry. I think it's 5 now. Me and Mike has recently decided to redo our bookcase here in one of our homes in Cape Town. And we were so inspired by the hotels that we visited that we decided to do it in a whole hotel style. And this bookcase is just full of your awards as a speaker. I also know that you've contributed over the years so much to the industry and that you have such a heart. Why is it so important for you? And I know you work with so many speakers, especially entrepreneurs who are speakers, and I know it can get you sometimes actually quite upset and angry when you see these speakers not ultimately using their voice to build a business and get it out there to the world. You know, it's not just about a keynote. It's so much bigger and so much larger than that. Would you mind speaking around that a little bit to our audience and especially the speakers who's listening in?
Firstly, I'm what's called a global speaking fellow. There's at the moment 36 of us in the world out of 90,000 speakers on LinkedIn. So, you know, we're very well known, Landy, for speaking around the world, and we know pretty much all the great speakers and they know us. But the reason I love speaking as a vehicle for the entrepreneur, the consultant, the coach, and the professional speaker is because speaking changes lives. And I actually don't like the words changes lives, but I'm using them to get the impact that I'm looking for. Speaking is what gets inside the CEO's head or the entrepreneur's head that gets them to change something in their business, the way they're selling, the way they're marketing, the way they're thinking, the way they're exercising, whatever it is you speak on is irrelevant. But it gets change, and it gets positive change. And positive change gets people more conscious. And, you know, I have a saying that every single person on this planet will leave a footprint when they die. There's no doubt. We all leave footprints on this planet, imprinted in our children's minds, in our grandchildren's, in our communities, our friends, our families, our businesses, our clients. But unfortunately, most of these footprints are pretty rubbish footprints. In fact, most people's lives don't really amount to too much because they hide their genius inside them. So everybody should write a book and everybody should share their genius in some way, because that's the way we can truly grow and develop consciously and make good decisions. Because we've made some pretty bad decisions over the last 200 years as a species, where we've killed our planet to a large degree. We've gone undiversified and racist and sexist and all of this sort of stuff that just doesn't serve us as humanity. That's not the way it was in the ancient world. By the way, if you don't agree with me, find an ancient city, and I'm not talking about Middle Ages, find an ancient city that had a wall around it. You won't find one. People lived as one in a conscious environment. We need to do that again, and that's why speaking is so important. That's why the great orators of the past, Socrates, Pythagoras, you know, Archimedes, those people shifted lives, and that's why their names are still known today. Plato is another one.
And these days with technology, speaking is almost becoming broadcasting, because if you have a voice, you can be on stage, you can be on a podcast, you can be on a YouTube channel, you can be on webinars, so many platforms. My last question to you, and that is about you having a tendency to run elite events in the most curious places. I know you've had it in castles, you've had events for leaders and entrepreneurs in Dracula's castle, you in Egypt, in the craziest places. And for those of you who don't know this, you know, it's not possible for me and Mike to drag all the entrepreneurs of the world to these small premium events with us anymore. So it's normally a handful, 5 people, 6 people at most. Why is it so important for you to create an experience in these curious places like castles and these things for this people, these leaders that you so much have a heart for and want to teach, you know, how to have the ultimate impact? Why is this experience you're creating for them so important? Why don't you just teach them, you know, one-on-one online, or, you know, do it the way other people are doing it?
2 answers. Number one, it's boring.
Right answer.
Yeah.
Tick.
Number two, I love what Rainer Pettig, who joined us in the Dorgon in France last year at the 17th century French castle that we hired for the week for our Platinum Mastermind. platinum-mastermind.com, by the way, if you want to check it out. We're online at the moment. We'll be doing live events as the world frees up. But I love what he said. He said he couldn't remember what day it was, but he'll remember the experience for the rest of his life. And there's something that just imprints by doing something that's special with a group of people that are like-minded in a most amazing place. And that's why we've had our board meetings in Transylvania. And that's why we've run, you know, business masterminds in Cairo at the pyramids and things like that, because it means something. And it's something that 99.99999% of the planet will never experience. And it's such a gift to be able to bring that for people. And I really hope that people will come and join us on that in the future.
And what I've seen with some of the small groups we've taken with us to all these places before is like every single environment or location changes the frame, changes the thinking. You know, your ability to think strategically about your business when you're on a ship has a different effect than when you're in France cooking around the table and having a deep conversation about business and life. And I've seen that literally how different environments impacts people's thoughts and feelings and every time give them a different result.
Absolutely. And as you know, with our last journey that we hosted, there was only one person on that whole journey that had never been on a trip with us before. There were people on that trip that had done 8, 9, 10 of these with us because, you know, this is something that people just want to do.
So to our listeners, I think it is abundantly clear to you now that Mike is a multidimensional being with so much intelligence to bring to this world, so much heart to bring to this world from a business perspective, speaking, sacred wisdom, as a musician. And I haven't even spoken to you about his cooking abilities, but we'll see you on this podcast.
Your cooking abilities are so much more. Folks, subscribe if you like this podcast. We've got fantastic guests coming up with Landy and I. Thank you, my love.
Thank you, my darling. See you soon.